Hey guys, it's George. We sat down to record the podcast this week on Wednesday morning, right after Loretta Lynch's press conference about FIFA. So we're a little loopy, a little euphoric. Okay, we are on a crazy big high. And in that excitement, I don't mention that later, which turned out to be today, this morning, Thursday morning, I'm also talking with Sam Borden. He was part of the New York Times team. He is part of the New York Times team that is covering these events from Zurich. He was there as the arrests were being made. He had it on video. And so we're really excited. I'm super excited to talk to him about how the story developed and what he's hearing in Zurich. So stick around for that. But for now, on with the show.
This episode of Dummy is brought to you by Who Are Ya? Check out WhoAreYaDesigns.com for the most clever soccer shirts in all the land. Whether you follow the English Premier League, MLS, or your favorite national teams, Who Are Ya has a shirt for you. Right now, they're offering free shipping to all Dummy listeners when you use promo code DUMMY at checkout. That's D-U-M-M-Y. Enter it in, and you'll get free shipping on your order at WhoAreYaDesigns.com.
God bless America. Yeah, but it's not over, man. He's going to win the election on Friday.
Dude, the election means nothing. The election means nothing. I mean, he was going to win it anyway. It was a meaningless election before. It's a meaningless election now. It doesn't mean anything. If change is going to happen, it's not going to be because those people, you know, wearing those suits are going to vote different. I mean, come on.
No, of course not.
Please.
I've got a whole piece on. Just put out a piece on Al Jazeera. Hold on, I've got to put my headphones on.
Okay.
I got a piece coming on Al Jazeera in about 15 minutes.
Oh, nice, nice. Okay.
Making exactly that point. Anyway, it's been completely mad today.
Oh my God! Can you?
I can't wait. I can't wait for the opening ceremony tomorrow the conference.
Hello.
What? Hello, panic.
Man.
We're celebrating. This is like, oh God, it feels like I just had sex on VE Day or something, you know? Like,
George, is today the official launch of FIFA.WTF?
Oh dude, we've been using that as a link shortener for a couple months
now. I saw today because I clicked the link and I expected to be taken to some grandiose site, but it's Howler, so it's grandiose still.
Yeah,
but.
Exactly. Well, thank you. Oh my God, Dan, are you following this? I mean, come on,
it's gold, man.
David, I'm not even like, I haven't even digested it. I there are some implications here within the US that I think, I don't know if you're totally up to date with.
I'm getting some of them. I mean, you know, the Copa America has clearly been bought and sold, as have other tournaments. There are people involved in MLS who are being arrayed. So I haven't got all of the details. I mean, who has, man?
Right.
The whole, you know, CONCACAF is in trouble. CONMEBOL is in trouble. The Copa America is in trouble. FIFA's in trouble. You know, there's more to come.
It's brilliant.
Stop here. The only person at the moment, though, who is not in trouble is Sepp.
Well, yeah. I mean, okay, so he's not formally in trouble, but I mean, you know, how do you come away from this not thinking he's on like the most rickety platform he's ever stood on?
Man, but look what he's up against. You know, the vote is decided. There's no way of removing him. You know, the sponsors won't move unless people are prepared to take more radical action. The coalition of the willing inside the football world is prepared to really fucking go for it. Then he's there for the moment.
I don't know listen, the new development is that the Swiss government has stepped in and arrested these people, right? That is, to me, that is the big news out of this. That is the change, right? That wasn't there before. They were immune because who was going to go and arrest them? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But Sepp is in Switzerland. Unless he flees to Zimbabwe, they're not going to get him. I mean, they can get him.
What are they going to accuse him of? He is not personally, I guarantee, man, he does not put his hand in the till. He doesn't need to. That's why his expenses account is so generous and his wages are secret, you know? And he's not like those dudes in Latin America who, you know, they got to have 100 million, fantastically comfortable life.
Right.
So what are they going to nail him on? You know, he has turned a blind eye and knows exactly what's going on and presided over a court of thieves and rogues. But he himself is not culpable of that, which is the only way that the criminal prosecution can nail him. The way he operates patronage inside FIFA is distasteful to us, but it's not illegal. Mm-hmm. You know, people then do illegal shit with the money that they get from FIFA. But again, see no evil, hear no evil. That's why they're trying to spin the line that this is good for FIFA. That is straight from Blatter's mouth, man, to Walter de Gregorio. You know, this is good for FIFA. At last, Loretta, I love you. You can come and help me clean up FIFA and I can stay in charge.
Sorry, I'm a little bit lightheaded right now after that press conference. We sort of jumped right into to the discussion here, and I started recording without Danny and David knowing, but I think we're going to jump in. I'm George Qureshi. I'm in Memphis, Tennessee. David Goldblatt is with us. He's in Bristol, England, not Connecticut. And Danny Carbassian, Miami, Florida, I want to say?
Yep.
In your closet?
In the closet. Last show in the closet, actually, moving on Monday.
Oh, yes. Do you guys know?
Hey, Danny, how far are you from CONCACAF HQ? The FBI have been raiding it today. Is it like down the street from you?
It is. It's just across the bridge, actually, in South Beach. And funny enough, we hosted an event, like a Fight Against Racism event down here about 2 years ago, and we went and toured the new offices. Actually, Jeffrey Webb, president of CONCACAF, spoke at our press conference and everything. But we went to their offices, funny enough, and all the offices are like just – it's glass. Everywhere is glass. Like you can see through absolutely everything from one end of the office all the way through all the offices to the other end. And, you know, this was after all the Jack Warner stuff, and they'd said, you know, when we built this office, we had transparency in mind, you know, so we were sure to make, you know, glass walls for everything. And it's so far it's worked out. But I think today's news has kind of crumbled that as well.
Man, they said that about the FIFA HQ, except they didn't mention that 2/3 of it is underground.
Underground bunker. I was going to say, you know who else is hiding in a closet today? Sepp Blatter. He is, you know.
Man.
Oh.
Yeah, according to Walter de Gregorio, the director of communications who fielded that extraordinary press conference, the president is relaxed. He's not happy, he's not dancing, but he's relaxed and he's calm. I don't think he's bullshitting us, actually, because, you know, Blatter is not being accused of anything other than incompetence on his watch. But he's not actually in the firing line of any of the authorities. And the election that's coming up on Friday against Prince Ali of Jordan, I don't see anything just at the moment that knocking him off his perch.
I agree. He's not going to, you know, look, he's not going to lose that election. But David, what does that election mean? I mean, he was going to win it anyway. It doesn't matter. Everyone knows it's rigged. Everyone knows that he's got the power structure in place to remain president. You know, anyone watching this knew that change wasn't going to come from within. It was never going to come from within.
I ironically enough, this is the argument of FIFA. Walter de Gregorio today saying, you know, we welcome the criminal investigations by the Attorney General of Switzerland and of the United States, because, you know, we couldn't deal with this ourselves. We had to have help from outside. And I think the same goes for the reform process. You know, what comes out of this and where we go from here cannot be just left to the insiders alone. They've proved themselves totally ethically, practically, and politically incompetent. And there need to be other voices and other powers at the table when we sort this thing out.
I mean, yeah, like it's just more bullshit coming from Sepp and FIFA, right? I mean, at this point, I say change won't come from within. I think that actually might not be true. You, David, pointed out earlier that you know, what actually can happen to him? He's not, you know, he's not legally culpable for any of this stuff, as far as we know. His fingerprints aren't on the weapons. And yet, you know, my theory is that financial pressure from sponsors leaving, from putting, you know, from turning off the taps could cause that money that trickles down to the federations that keep Blatter in power to get him out.
It's possible. I mean, that said, you know, the deals for the next, two World Cups are already signed. You know, I suspect quite a lot of the money has already been handed over, and FIFA's legal department is sensational. So it's going to be difficult to actually, you know, turn off the spigots of money for years and years and years. You know, symbolically, it would be important if a number of sponsors or broadcasters were prepared to withdraw from deals or reconsider their relationship with FIFA, but you know there are plenty of others who are prepared to step in. I don't suspect that Gazprom, for example, or any of the Chinese multinational corporations that have got themselves involved are likely to abandon FIFA anytime soon on these grounds. So I think there's that can help. It can be part of a coalition, but it's going to have to come. It's going to have to come from elsewhere. We're going to need politicians in as many countries as possible who have a plausible, you know, platform to start making the case. And I see the Labour Party today in the UK has called for Blatter to resign. You know, we need action from civil society. We need fan groups. We need to make a noise in stadiums. You know, we need to think about ways about letting Blatter know and make it as hard for him as possible to stay in power.
Yeah, I agree. So, guys, let's take a step back real quick. I am in such a euphoria right now. That it's a little hard to organize my thoughts. But here's what I want to do. I want to very briefly, I'm on justice.gov right now looking at the indictment, and I want to just go through the people who are actually named. There are 9 FIFA officials, 5 corporate executives. We have Jeffrey Webb. To me, that's one of the biggest names here because he's the CONCACAF president. He came in to replace Jack Warner, who's also named. And, you know, he came in explicitly saying we're going to clean this up, we're going to get rid of corruption, we're, you know, he led a fight against racism. It's a, you know, he was saying all those things, and yet here he is named in this indictment. And I don't know, I hesitate to end that thought with like a definitive statement because I haven't formulated it in my mind. It's all so fresh. Why don't we go through, look at the scope of the people named here, because I think that is just breathtaking.
Yeah, let's.
Yeah. So we've got Jeffrey Webb, current FIFA vice president and executive committee member of CONCACAF president. Eduardo Lee, current FIFA executive committee member elect, CONCACAF executive committee member and Costa Rican Soccer Federation president. Julio Roca, current FIFA development officer, former Central American Football Union president, and Nicaraguan Soccer Federation president. I mean, it's actually kind of amazing how many of these people are coming from CONCACAF. Although, you know, given the U.S.'s, you know, their sort of domain and the fact that CONCACAF has run out of the U.S.
But it's not amazing, George. You know, Blatter has been, you know, cultivating CONCACAF, and you know, Warner and Blazer, ludicrous and ridiculous human beings as they are, knew how to play that game and deliver a block vote, and 35 votes is fantastically important.
No, you're absolutely right. What I'm,
you know,
David, I think it's a combination though of that, you know, sort of being the core of the corruption, but also the fact that the U.S. jurisdiction, I think, extends more into CONCACAF than any other body that we're talking about here. There's
sure.
Also Kostas Taklas, current attaché to the CONCACAF president. Jack Warner, we all know who he is, FIFA, you know, former FIFA vice president and executive committee member, CONCACAF president. Eugenio Figueredo, we need Danny for that one. current FIFA vice president and executive committee member, former CONMEBOL president and Uruguayan Soccer Federation president. Rafael Esquivel, current CONMEBOL executive committee member and Venezuelan Soccer Federation president. Jose Maria Marin, current member of the FIFA organizing committee for the Olympic football tournaments, former CBF president, Brazilian Federation. Nicolas Leos, former FIFA executive committee member and CONMEBOL president.
Oh, my favorite.
He's my favorite. Yeah, I was going to say.
Tell us about him.
Leos is reputed to have said to Lord Treisman, who was fronting the England 2018 bid, that he really wasn't interested in crude monetary reward. But as the French had extended the Legion d'Honneur to him in the lead up to the 1998 French World Cup, he rather had his eye on a baronetcy and membership of the English aristocracy.
Yes. Oh, man.
I mean, Marine is also pretty good, though, guys. You remember the story last year, because he was the guy in charge of the Brazil World Cup, and he's the guy who pockets the medal at the youth tournament.
I don't remember that. Right? I don't remember that story. I don't know that story. Tell me that story.
So he's awarding the medals to the players at the end of a youth tournament in Sao Paulo. And in full view of the camera, he takes one of the medals, wraps the ribbon around it, and sticks it in his pocket. Oh, and as a consequence, one of the goalkeepers doesn't get a medal.
Oh, yes. I mean, let me tell you, just having been around this world a little bit, there is so much swag and so much, like, so many little trinkets, like worthless little things that are given away. Like, why does he want that? Like, none of this makes any sense to me. It's just so craven and stupid.
Because he
David, what are the rules regarding knighthood in the UK? Do you have to be born in the UK?
No, I think on occasion a knighthood can be given, but you know, you slight Nicholas Liorza, I don't think would be getting one. But yeah, I think it is actually. I'm trying to remember. I think it is possible.
Can you imagine how scandalized the Dowager Countess of Downton Abbey would be if he were ennobled? I mean, come on, that would be so. I'm hoping that's a plot point in the next scene. Okay, it says further. There are a couple more defendants here. Alejandro Burzaco, controlling principal of Torneos y Competencias S.A., a sports marketing business based in Argentina. Aaron Davidson, president of Traffic Sports USA. He's based in Miami. That's a big one, and we'll have to talk about him in a minute. Hugo and Mariano Jinkis, controlling principals of Full Play Group SA, a sports marketing business based in Argentina. And it says, and one of the defendants was in the broadcasting business, but allegedly served as an intermediary to facilitate illicit payments between sports marketing executives and soccer officials. That's probably a pretty lucrative job. Jose Margulis, controlling principal of Valente Corp and Somerton Limited.
God. Wow. There it is. The sporting media complex in all its gory details laid out before us.
Okay. So I really want to – let's dive in a little bit to Davidson here. He's one of the more interesting characters for us because he's the president of Traffic, which is a huge – soccer company. I mean, marketing. They I believe own a good chunk of the NASL. So you know, there are some, you know, the tentacles here don't stop at CONCACAF. There are, you know, relationships that extend, you know, beyond that and into American soccer in particular. I guess let's go here, David. Do you understand, like, what are the implications for these guys? Are they gonna do we know if they're actually gonna be extradited from? I mean, I saw somewhere that they need permission from these people who were arrested to be extradited to the U.S. And failing that, the U.S. will have to go through a more arduous process of requesting it from the Swiss government.
I mean, you know, now we're into kind of criminal legal territory. And if I had those kind of skills, George,
you know what I'm doing.
So my guess is, you know, though the accused will fight extradition tooth and nail, the US will have to go through whatever legal extradition procedures are available to them. I think they will probably win and kicking and screaming 2-3 years down the line. There will be court cases in the States. You know, we've been down this path to some extent, you know, with Salt Lake City, which, you know, where the IOC, you know, more widely was bust open by the US legal system investigating crimes committed on US territory in connection with that bid. You know, I expect them to be absolutely slammed in court. You know, the case must be absolutely rock solid if they're prepared to go to this. The Swiss end is more complex. Remember, there are two different investigations going on here side by side. They've cooperated today in terms of getting hold of people. And it's obviously great media timing, and it's convenient that everybody's there in Zurich in the same 5-star hotel to be busted at. But the Swiss thing is different. You know, the Swiss seem to have two investigations going on, one into generalized corruption in association with FIFA monies, and one concerning the 2018-2022 World Cup allocation, which is separate from the US investigations, which are not to do with either of those, as I understand, but mainly to do with the selling of media rights for competitions in North America, Central America, and South America. You know, there's different stuff going on. The guys that are going to be extradited, I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, we're looking, the day in court will arrive. It's some way away, but it will arrive.
Okay, coming up next, we are joined by Sam Borden of the New York Times. He was part of the team that broke the story. He's still in Zurich. He's there right now. He had to call me back because he was talking with an official of an FA in probably in some luxurious Zurich hotel room. But here he is, me and Sam talking about how this story developed and what he's hearing over there.
Oh, hello there, listener. How you doing? Good, good. Now, listen, just give me a moment to turn that music down. I don't want there to be any distractions because I have something really, really important to tell you, okay? So, take a deep breath, right? Are you sitting comfortably? Get yourself a glass of whiskey, unless you're in control of a motor vehicle or it's early in the morning. And in that case, just take a really deep breath, compose yourself, because I want you to be ready for what I'm about to tell you. Because what I'm about to tell you is going to change your life completely, or at the very least, your wardrobe. Okay, so here it is. Get a load of this. Our amazing sponsor, Who Are You Designs, is giving you, and I mean you in particular, my good friend, 25% off everything. Everything, that's right. The entire range. You know that t-shirt? It's got like Eric Cantona on the front and it's his sort of moody, beardy French face. That one, 25% off. They've got one and it's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Football Club. Very cool. That one is also 25% off. All you have to do is use the code DUMMY25 at checkout. Okay, so go log on to whoareyoudesigns.com and do some shopping. You know, you really should treat yourself. You deserve it. You've done so many great things today and yesterday. You know what I mean? Okay, and as always,
keep it 100.
Right, back to George.
All right, joining me now is Sam Borden, reporter for the New York Times. Sam, you were at the scene essentially when the wall started to fall. Can you describe what you saw? Anyone who follows you on Twitter saw some pretty amazing video. I just want to know how you sort of became aware of what was happening.
Yeah, well, we had been, myself and the three other reporters working on the story had been working sources for several days trying to figure out where to be and when to be there. And we were able to pinpoint a time at the hotel, the Gorlach in Zurich. And so Mike Schmidt, my colleague and a photographer, and I were all there for an hour and a half, like 4:15 in the morning, until the police showed up around a little before 6. And it was really, the thing that stands out to me is that it was very peaceful. You know, it was not like a police raid you'd see in a movie or something like that. I mean, there was no guns drawn or bulletproof vests or anything. Like, these guys were very, methodical, went to the front desk, got the information about the people they were there to detain, went into the hotel, knocked on the doors, brought the guys out. I mean, if you were sleeping on the same hallway as one of these guys who was being arrested, I'm not even sure that you would have woken up. It was very calm and just sort of serene, I guess, for lack of a better word. If arrests can be serene.
Well, I don't think we're used to seeing white-collar criminals arrested, at least the visuals of that. And so, it's almost shocking to see how actually genteel, or I guess maybe Swiss, that process was.
Yeah, I mean, as a sports reporter, it's not like I have a lot of experience with arrests of any kind, or, at least witnessing them live. And so I didn't really know what to expect. But yeah, it was very... I guess it was just very procedural, I was in the hallway and saw a couple of the guys being detained. I saw Eduardo Lee from Costa Rica, and I saw sort of the tail end of Jeff Webb when he was being let out. And it was really, they had a bag with them, like they were, not handcuffed or anything. Mm-hmm. So it was very, I guess, anticlimactic in that regard, if you were hoping for sort of like a, you know, a shootout or anything. But in I guess in reality, this is probably sort of the way it goes down most of the time with white collar situations.
I think shootout was one soccer metaphor or pun that I didn't hear yesterday. Can I ask you, it sounds like you maybe had an inkling that this was going to happen. How was news breaking over there in Switzerland?
I mean, we had an inkling that something was going to happen. I don't know that it was, I don't think that we imagined it was necessarily going to be exactly the way that it was. Mm-hmm. You know, we were just, I think, fortunate in terms of our reporting that allowed us to be in a position to see what ultimately did go down. And obviously once you see something, you're able to, you know, report it with, you know, veracity.
Okay, so one of your tweets sort of early in this timeline has a FIFA official sort of being a little bit indignant that you know, they're, whoa, once again, we're being tarred with this brush. I want to ask you about that because, you know, it's certainly not the case, you know, necessarily that every FIFA official is corrupt and dirty. At the same time, you sort of look at it and you say, well, you know, yeah, but you knew stuff was going on and you didn't take a stand publicly. How should we sort of think about some of the people who haven't been named but are part of FIFA and part of this world?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very fair question, and I think it's a very reasonable, you know, I can see both sides of it. I mean, I understood exactly what the guy was saying, and I have some sympathy for that sentiment. But at the same time, I think it's very reasonable to look at an organization that has had, you know, countless issues of corruption over decades and say, look, you know, if you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. And I've made that argument to any number of officials that I talk to. And, you know, I think ultimately FIFA's structure, where it's a bunch of federations within a bunch of confederations, which are then underneath this larger umbrella, everybody is sort of serving a local audience, a regional audience, and then, you know, sort of the broader audience. And it just, there are so many layers there that it allows for both corruption and also, I guess, kind of a powerlessness from some of the, you know, smaller players or sort of at the smaller levels. Look, they get their money, they get their budgets, they get their opportunities to, you know, build soccer facilities and host events and put forth national teams from that larger umbrella. So the argument that the officials make back to me is, sure, I could stand against corruption and really try to make a difference, but I might be cutting off the legs of the federation with which I'm supposed to be serving. And, you know, it's a difficult situation. And I like I said, I have sympathy sort of for the officials, but I also can definitely understand the larger point.
Well, yeah, it's that remove, I think, you know, hey, Sepp Blatter says, you know, these guys are elected, they're sent here, I have to deal with what I'm dealt. That sort of allows him to maintain, you know, an air of innocence throughout all this. I was fascinated by De Gregorio's press conference yesterday. I think you were there. You know, I think that basically everything he said could have started with, you're not going to believe this, but was there, like, you know, if you're in the room, is there some sort of like winking understanding that, okay, yeah, I mean, I got to go through this ordeal, or is he like completely serious when he's spouting all this stuff? I mean, it sounds crazy.
No, I mean, I think he was very serious. And I think that, you know, it's hard for me to speak for everybody in the room, but my sense of, you know, my reaction, I guess, was that this was a, you know, a very poor public relations approach, you know? I mean, it seemed like a very disconnected from reality approach to the situation, you know? I think if you're a soccer fan, the idea that, you know, the president is not shaken in some significant way by what had happened and that, you know, the business of FIFA will go on without being affected, which is sort of like the theme of what he was saying. It just, to me, it seemed like a very detached approach. The behind the scenes in reality, my sense is that there is a greater level of concern and, you know, sort of urgency in response to what's happened yesterday. But, you know, at this point, it seems like the election is going to go forward tomorrow. And I think we've seen historically with FIFA that, you know, they are able to get an incredible amount of stuff underneath their rug, you know, in terms of sweeping problems away.
Yep.
And so a lot of times it's just time passing. They're going to elect their president tomorrow, and, you know, a month or 2 months or 3 months from now, people will be focused on European qualifiers and Women's World Cup champion having just been crowned and what's next in the fall. And, you know, it just sort of keeps on rolling and the problems never actually get solved.
So tell me this. To what extent is it was this timed perhaps to fall right before this election and perhaps disrupt what I think most of us think of as a fait accompli when it comes to Sepp Blatter's reelection? And to what extent was it just sort of, well, that's when all of these delegates were in Switzerland, so we had to do it then?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's certainly, from a law enforcement perspective, I would imagine my sense from talking to some officials is that it was more the latter than the former. I don't think that it hurt that it was before the election, but I think in general, when you're talking about, you know, sort of a multinational investigation, obviously when everybody is in one place and you can do it, you know, you can gather your people that you want to detain and evidence at the same time, that's ideal. Do I think that it had, you know, there was something, some factor with the election? Probably, but I think from a law enforcement perspective, I think generally they were going for more of a convenience factor than anything else.
Okay, last question for you, and it's also sort of an either or. You know, a lot of these guys who are named, it's super heavily weighted toward our own region, CONCACAF, and some in South America. Is that a factor of, you know, this region sort of just being at the corrupt heart of Sepp Blatter's control, or do you think it's because that's where the U.S. can sort of claim more jurisdiction and therefore go after those people?
Yeah, I think the second. I mean, I think if anybody were to look at this and say, well, that means that there's no corruption in Asia, you know, Africa or anywhere else,
right,
that'd be insane. I think that, yeah, the DOJ obviously focused on stuff that was connected to the United States. You know, CONCACAF obviously would fall, you know, squarely in sort of the purview there. I think that, you know, the investigation of the Swiss police are undertaking and, you know, seize documents at FIFA headquarters and all of that. I'm hopeful that will turn up some significant, you know, findings, and we'll probably have more of a European bent to it. But I think in general, the reason why that so many of the people that were arrested yesterday were from, you know, North America, Central America, and South America was a product of who was doing the investigation, not where the improprieties in global football are.
Right. Now, okay, I said last question, one more. Are you, you know, I assume most of your reporting since this has happened has been sort of counting votes, figuring out what's going to happen in this election. What do you foresee?
You know, it's difficult to say. I was just talking to somebody before, a European official, and he was saying that, yeah, sure, like, you know, you think in FIFA, you know, you can sort of canvass the room and, hey, what are you thinking about this issue or this, you know, candidate or whatever? And yet you come into something with an idea of what it's going to be. But as we've seen, votes are not often what they appear to be. And sometimes those votes can be swayed by factors that aren't even necessarily above board. So, you know, my sense is that it will be closer than what everybody had imagined. I don't know that it's going to be a blowout necessarily for Blatter the way that people had been predicting. But it's also hard for me to say because I think there's a strong sentiment, or my sense is that there's a strong sentiment as well from the Blatter supporters to really rally around, like, this leave here in a time of crisis, you know, like, we really need to close ranks. And the truth is that, you know, Russia and Qatar have a lot to protect in terms of, you know, their upcoming World Cups, and Blatter has been staunch in saying that those World Cups are going to take place where they were voted to take place. So those two organizations, you know, carry some significant sway, and I think that it would be difficult to say that something bad happened yesterday, and so that means everybody's going to swing their support now to the new guy. I think the truth is that in FIFA, as we've seen so many times before, everything is a lot more, you know, complicated and a lot murkier than one might first imagine.
All right, Sam. Well, hey, thanks for joining me. And, you know, everyone who goes to Zurich comes into contact with FIFA comes under suspicion. So I'm going to give you one chance here just to clear your name. Have you accepted any bribes?
I have not accepted any bribes. Everything has been above board the whole way for us. And I'm happy to say that Loretta Lynch, I hope, won't be announcing any kind of charges against me or the New York Times.
There you have it. Once and for all, Sam Borden of the New York Times, your reporting has been amazing, and I will be following you very closely over the next few days. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, George. I appreciate it.
Let's talk about this. What do we foresee? I mean, you know, we all know how the media works. It's a huge deal today. it's going to be gone soon unless there are further developments, unless there are more charges or, you know, extradition happens pretty soon or, you know, unless something happens. You know, David, where do you, if you're going to handicap this, what are the odds that, that, you know, it goes away next week? You know, Blatter's reelected on what is that, Friday, the election's happening. You know, I mean, nothing, you know, people keep dying in Qatar. You know, nothing changes. It just keeps going. I mean, that's my big fear.
Yeah, that's a possible scenario. I mean, you know, the world press and world public opinion and the world football authorities have disappointed us in the past. One thing that would certainly help keep the pressure on is if the football associations of the world who are not supporting Blatter actually start making trouble and noise on a regular basis. They have enough money and influence and airtime to consistently be on this rather than just leave it for the silence of, you know, just the Congress. So I think there's a responsibility there on the presidents of the football associations outside of the Blatter coterie to make a noise. It could happen. I mean, again, if enough sponsors, you know, are prepared to make some kind of noise, you know, I'm seeing on Twitter there are players and there are fans all over the world who want to make a noise about it. And there are ways of making a noise. You know, football is televised. There's a lot of opportunities to do stuff. We've seen what can happen. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens at the Women's World Cup when Blatter shows up, apparently towards the end of the tournament, about what kind of reception Canada and women's football can prepare for him.
So let's dive in a little bit, as much as we can, to some of these specific stories. I mean, the charges are money laundering, bribery, things like that. Two of the ones that stick out to me are obviously revolving around the Copa Centenario that's going to happen next year in the U.S., the Copa America 100th anniversary. They're saying that $110 million in bribes were paid, I believe, to land this in the U.S. You know, putting aside whether that's legal or not, how much, what is a tournament like that worth? Like, why is it worth paying all that money to get the tournament here, David? Is it, I mean, it does it have to do with just TV? Is it that simple? Or, you know, TV money that's going to be made from this? Or what is it exactly that people are paying for there?
Well, that's a really good question, man. I mean, $110 million as the graft. What was the contract, you know, what was the over-the-table contract worth? I mean, the economics of this are really interesting, you know, because the European, you know, the Euros are the third most watched and I think the third most valuable sort of, you know, sporting mega event in the world behind the Olympics and the World Cup. It's not inconceivable to imagine that one day a Copa America that embraces you know, North Central South America and the Caribbean could be just as valuable, at which point, you know, having your foot in the door, $110 million up front might not seem a lot of money.
The whole idea here is that staging the tournament in the U.S. would bring a lot more money than it would if you were going to do it in any South American country, just because of the audience that they'd bring and you know, the amount they can charge for advertisements and things like that. But okay, so there's that. There's you know, and again, we're reacting to this pretty much instantaneously. The press conference just ended. We're still absorbing this. But another aspect of this is there are allegations that an apparel company, or I should say, a manufacturer, I believe is the term, was paying bribes. And the consensus on Twitter, at least, seems to be that was Nike and the Brazilian Football Federation. What are they talking about there, David? Can you elucidate that at all?
Well, I haven't seen the debate on Twitter, but I mean, this is not news. You know, I mean, Nike landed the contract for the Brazilian shirt back in the kind of mid-90s under Teixeira. I mean, I think, you know, you've only got to put one and one together to make two. It was a deeply corrupt regime at the time. It was demonstrated to be by countless congressional investigations in Brazil. I mean, how else, you know, how else were they going to get it? Of course there was a payment. I mean, I just sort of think, you know, maybe we're getting to a degree of kind of legal certainty in the documents and cases come out. But this is, you know, this is not news. I mean, man, this has been going on for 40 years, more, since, you know, Adidas, you know, wrote the rule book on this,
right,
back in the 1970s. I mean, people, you know, the money has got bigger, much, much bigger, and it has become much more systematic. This is no surprise.
Well, so, I mean, in some sense, it's linked. I mean, there are similarities here to the sort of the huge blow up of ISI, right, which was the marketing company. And I don't want to get this wrong, David, I think you have a more intimate knowledge of this, but, you know, Adidas was involved with ISI, and it was basically FIFA's marketing arm, and it went,
yeah,
it went kaboom.
Yeah, I mean, FIFA, Adidas helped set up ISL as FIFA's marketing agency, because, I mean, you could sort of on one the sort of see the logic that, you know, FIFA is not a TV rights, TV marketing company. So you put that out to somebody else to sell your rights, they take your cut, and you get the rest of the money. You know, the way it worked, and we know because the documentation is now completely in the public domain, that, you know, $100 million was paid then to a variety of members of the executive committee, including João Havelange, the then president of FIFA, to ensure, you know, that things ran smoothly. So we've absolutely, this is, you know, again, they wrote the playbook of how this works, and what you're seeing in CONCACAF and CONMEBOL is just the same system of exchange and payments, you know, same way it worked.
Danny, I wonder, you know, coming at this from your perspective, I mean, here's the thing, the Europa League final is later today, right? You know, What I kind of love about this is that world soccer is not going to grind to a halt. I mean, that's a good thing and a bad thing. It sort of demonstrates that, you know, these fat cats can go away and nothing changes. I mean, honestly, people are still going to play soccer. People are going to watch soccer. There's going to, you know, it's going to be on TV. It's going to, you know, I don't think that any of this means there's going to be any sort of disruption in how we consume soccer, which I'm kind of wistful about. I wish that there were some kind of disruption. People could say that, hey, this has consequences, but it's going to just carry on.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken about this before as well. You know, I think when Bobby was on, we were talking about, like, what does it take for people to stop watching the game, or for a country to pull out, or for a federation to say, no, they're not going to the World Cup. And I think unless, like, a huge, huge majority of the people are doing it, and they know that they're going to be backed when they do say they're not going to, you know, either you're not watching it or you're not broadcasting it, then you will watch it, because it's, you know, the actual game at its lowest level in terms of just 11 players playing against 11 players is, you know, what brings people joy, you know, unfortunately. And all this stuff that's going on around it, I don't think it'll deter from people wanting to watch their favorite teams and their favorite players still play. And by the way, did you see, you know, Xavi had he had his kind of sending off at Camp Nou last week, and actually there was several articles in the press kind of hammering him about his decision to go to the Far East, and saying, like, it was his, he shouldn't have gone, you know, for the money, he doesn't need any more money. It was his kind of moral and social responsibility not to go out there and be the poster child, you know, and what, for the World Cup and all that sort of stuff, which they, like, surely they're going to use him.
Where's he going?
He signed for a team in Qatar, isn't he?
In Qatar.
Yeah. So, and everyone's basically said, like, you'd be silly to think that they're not going to use, you know, kind of his mug as the face for all of it in terms of marketing it and everything, saying, you know, stars are coming here and whatnot. And, it's just tarnished his, you know, his overall reputation. And you know, I bring that up because we were kind of talking about that, George, saying, like, would players ever say, you know, no, I'm not going to play in a World Cup because of what's happening? And unfortunately, like, this is a perfect example of a player, you know, who's been offered an inordinate amount of money, I'm sure, to go play out there. And despite everything that's happened there over the past years and everything that's likely going to continue happening over the next couple years as they prepare for the World Cup, you know, he's kind of just gone out there and brushed it aside. So
yeah, I mean, look, I don't look at this and think, you know, players should boycott, players shouldn't play. I don't think that at all, actually. I think that I sympathize with them. They this is their profession. They need to get, I think that, you know, we as fans have I actually think it's harder to corral all of us to do something, but I think that we have a little bit more power in terms of and more reason, I think. David, tell me if you agree with this, but to actually do something here, to actually, you know, do something drastic that's going to force this kind of change. I mean, I was thinking, what if everybody on Earth just didn't watch the Champions League final? I mean, what would happen? What would be the actual consequences of that? Would that change?
Well, we'd, I mean, you know, yeah, no, people would, you know, that would have a real effect, really, if everybody really didn't want. I think that's kind of harsh on UEFA, who are not really the villains of the piece here. You know, I think we've got to direct our fire at the, no, at but, the correct but, constituency.
Yeah, but it would just be a, like, what is a demonstration of that kind of mass power, you know, that by itself, I think, is worth something and would frighten. Would frighten people, you know, who can actually make these changes. I don't know. That's a thought.
I mean, it would, George, but I mean, like, you know, you said, what if everybody in the world didn't watch the Champions League final? Like, despite as horrible as everything is, like, it's still an amazing. It's the best of the best playing in a game. You know, I mean, it's I hate to say it, but it's like it's an amazing game to watch, and it's just a shame that like we have to kind of discuss this to say like what would happen, obviously, because you want to see these guys that are at the best of their ability playing against each other at this top level. But I completely understand, you know, but unfortunately I think nobody, you know, people are going to watch the game.
We're talking about broadcasts, we're talking about, you know, as you mentioned, David, it's not just the sponsors, it's the TV broadcast rights that are so lucrative for FIFA. There was a mini scandal a month ago when it was announced that Fox had been awarded the broadcast rights in the U.S. for the 2022 World Cup without any sort of bidding process. That, you know, and ESPN was very upset about this.
I bet they were. I'd say it's another case for Loretta Lynch.
I think that there has to be, you know, why would FIFA do that unless there were some incentive for them to do it? I mean, you know, that to me... I don't want to accuse anybody of any wrongdoing, but you know, what is the line between making a giant preemptive offer and a bribe? I don't know what that line is.
Well, and a lot of people like to be friends with Rupert Murdoch.
That's a good point too. I mean, it's funny, like my dislike for him, is that, like, it didn't spike. My meters didn't spike when you said his name, just because we've been talking about Sepp for so long. It's kind of amazing.
He sets a high bar.
Yeah, he really does. can we all agree that our Tiki Taka is Loretta Lynn's, Loretta Lynch's press conference just now?
I think so.
I mean,
I think so.
I'm going to be watching that on repeat for years to come, I think. I'm excited for the sequel. I can't wait. I hope it, you know, I kind of want it to become the next Fast and Furious, you know, just never ending. Just bring that cast back, man. Get them up there on the stage. Get them in front of a microphone. I will be watching.
The cast, maybe what we need is the House of Cards people to get in on this. Oh, you know, in the terrible FIFA movie, they had Tim Roth playing Blatter, but what we really need is Kevin Spacey.
All right, let's put out a call for ideas for a FIFA version of House of Cards. I think we need to come up with a concept. We need to go to a network. You know, I can think of a couple that have an interest in soccer and try to sell this immediately. So send us your ideas.
More to come, guys. Yes. Seriously. Don't miss the opening ceremony of the FIFA Congress, which is on Thursday evening in Switzerland. Because at the one in Brazil, you know, Blatter actually danced. He dropped his shoulder and showed us a few moves up there on the stage with a Brazilian supermodel, right? And he was meant to be worried that there were going to be term limits and the rest.
Yeah,
and he trashed them all. I'm predicting the same.
I agree. He's not going to be cowed by this. He's not. You know, he's all about that image of hey, this doesn't touch me. He's going to double down on that. He's gonna be just in exuberant spirits. It's going to be really, really interesting to watch.
I can't wait. Political theater of the highest order.
Okay, that does it for this episode of Dummy. I want to thank Sam Borden for joining this week, and as always, Danny Karbassian and David Goldblatt. Good to have them back on the show. Don't forget our sponsor, Who Are You Designs. They're having a special promo code right now. It's DUMMY25, and guess what? You'll get 25% off anything in the store. That's valid through May. So make sure you check out what they've got. If you're listening on iTunes, subscribe, leave a rating. I promise it helps. And if you're not following us on social media, that's crazy. We are at What a Howler. Finally, our newest issue is officially at the printer. We're so excited about it. We released the cover on Wednesday. It's Carly Lloyd kicking set bladder in the head or about to. He has a very sanguine expression on his face. Anyway, you should go look at it, order it, howlermagazine.com, shop.howlermagazine.com is the direct link. We would really appreciate you checking it out. Make sure you're subscribed also to our newsletter. We go out once a week on Fridays. It's called The Howler Bulletin, dispatches from the nether regions of the soccer universe. You can sign up by going to howlermagazine.com, scrolling down on the right, you'll see a little field to put your email address. Hit enter and then check your email inbox because you have to go and click on a confirmation email. Anyway, that's how you get on our email list. The Howler Singers are led by Lindsay Elliott. They are members of the choral ensemble Ghostlight. They made our theme tune. All the rest of the music is by Brian Kim. This episode was produced by Ryan Catanese. Matt Nelson is the executive producer of all of our podcasts. He's working on Howler Radio Season 2, as you may remember. My name is George Qureshi. I'll be back with you next Thursday with all the rest of these dummies. And remember, if you listen to Dummy, you will never listen alone.
This episode of Dummy is brought to you by Who Are Ya? Check out WhoAreYaDesigns.com for the most clever soccer shirts in all the land. Whether you follow the English Premier League, MLS, or your favorite national teams, Who Are Ya has a shirt for you. Right now, they're offering free shipping to all Dummy listeners when you use promo code Dummy at checkout. That's D-U-M-M-Y. Enter it in, and you'll get free shipping on your order at WhoAreYaDesigns.com.